for a couple of years now. They've corresponded with him regularly. I went over and met with him last year. He indicated he was ready to come and play in the NHL.
And welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. Frank Harnish sitting in, Ryan the Hockey Guy is still enjoying his vacation time. Chris Chapman is somewhere in the world still enjoying his time. I think he went to Taiwan and then Thailand, and I don't know where he's going now, but him and his son, from his Facebook post on that, he seems to be enjoying himself as well. But I am joined by one of the experts in hockey, certainly here in Las Vegas. I heard him earlier on today on Technically Correct, down the dial with Tyler Bischoff, and man says that he knows more about hockey than any other media person around here when it comes to the Golden Knights, and I'm not going to dispute him on it. Mr. Ken Bulkey. Ken, how you doing?
Hello. I'm good.
Heard you earlier.
Yeah,
enjoyed the segment. I never know what Tyler's going to throw at you.
How'd you think I did on trivia?
I thought you did okay, because he certainly tried to stack the deck against you a little bit here and there. The one thing that the trap that you fell into was you tried to overthink some of it.
I know. Every once in a while you get into the, you know, Tyler's trying to trap you, and then he would not trap me on some, and I missed the easy answers. Yeah, I could have done slightly better, but I thought I did all right.
No, you nailed some stuff that I'm sure some of the people would not even come close to getting. But, you know, sometimes Tyler's traps are when they're not traps.
I know. He's a tricky one.
He's a very dishonest kind of guy.
I'm not a big fan of his producer either.
No? Well,
mainly because of that imaging.
Neither is he, from what I've understood from
as
the hallways.
As it turns out, his producer's in this studio now. So yeah.
No, Jared Justice sitting in, filling in for Chris Chapman today. Jared's a good guy, and he's been working his butt off here at the station ever since Mark Seidel walked around, too. He's wearing many hats right now. He would not be in the band Men Without Hats.
Please do not play that imaging for me getting questions wrong on this show. It would save me a lot of heartache.
All right.
I heard it way too many times.
Yeah. I know you heard the. They also had a little. When you were answering those trivia questions, they were different things for the right and wrong.
The right one was Subban was making a save, and the wrong one was Barclay Goodrow scoring in game 7. And I heard that too many times. So I don't want to hear that anymore. And I also was criticized on Twitter for getting too many wrong. And forcing people to have to hear that. So hopefully that does not happen on this show.
Well, all I can say is on Twitter, you know, social media is haterade.
They're mean.
So you can expect some of that. I would like to know if you got too many wrong, what the person that sent you that, what their percentage of the questions that you were asked would have been.
I think I did fairly well.
I thought you did pretty well.
I could have done better. You know, he was doing a lot of minutes adjusted stuff, which isn't exactly stats that are horribly important because,
and a lot of guys,
does it matter?
He kind of threw this softball to start out with the Shipachev. That's kind of how he lures you into that trap, though.
I know. He's got some, Jedi mind tricks going there. He does this on Twitter to people. You got to be careful out there, you know. You got to be careful when Tyler's walking around. Good thing he only does it for sports knowledge and doesn't use it for worse.
Yeah,
I don't know what kind of.
That's why I follow Tyler and I enjoy his stuff, but I don't really reply to it because I don't want to be caught in that trap.
You step in and it's trouble.
I'm not as mobile as I used to be. I would have a hard time getting out of it. All right, let's get into the some of the stuff going on with the Golden Knights. And looking at Sinbin, because I pretty much look at it every day, and I suggest you do as well, Sinbin Vegas. They do a great job over there. And I noticed your partner, Jason, has a story today that I thought was kind of interesting about offer sheets and that. And it's like, why are offer sheets even around?
Well, I think the point of it is the system's messed up, and I think we're starting to understand that now, and now we've even seen a team for the first time in, what's it been, 10 years or whatever.
Since 2013, yeah.
Actually, so 6 years, actually do one, and it doesn't do any good. All it does is hold one team's cap hostage, and it allows another guy to get a deal that he probably shouldn't get, and the compensation's way off. I think that's the biggest thing is if a team were to offer a first, second, and third round pick for Sebastian Aho, I don't think Carolina takes it. But if they were to offer 4 firsts, which is the next level up, they probably take it. Or I think there's one level in between. the compensation's all off, because not only are you offering a massive amount of assets in finding the player, but then you also have to sign him to a contract that's too high. It's a double whammy, and
it's
makes
absolutely
lose, no
lose
sense.
Instead
yeah,
of win-win.
Win. That's yeah. exactly right. And really, it's lose-lose-lose, because the team who has to match the offer sheet, in this case Carolina, is now paying this ridiculous bonus structure to a player that they would not have had to do that if not for Montreal coming in and doing what they did. So the whole thing's a mess. I get why it happened. I understand the idea of why you would put an offer sheet in on a Carolina player with the new ownership there. I get it. But I think the point of what Jason was trying to go for in the article is they've got to change the compensation. It's got to be more so force guys to overpay. And if we allow guys to get overpaid, that just helps the league in regards to raising up the salary cap.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're not afraid to make moves on the ice to change the game with review and replay and stuff like that, and that's to their credit. But this here, it's almost like the offer sheet thing is just a joke.
Didn't make sense. Yeah. I mean, the concept is good. The concept is great in that a player is locked into a certain team until age of 27 unless someone comes in and goes nuts and swoops in and does something crazy. That concept's good. If somebody really values somebody else, you should allow them to go get that money. But the compensation throws it all off. I mean, like the Marner thing. It's going to cost somebody four first-round picks. Who would do that? And if you're going to do that, like, is there a player on the Golden Knights you wouldn't take four first-round picks for? I'd probably take it for Mark Stone.
Yeah, I was going to say the only one that I would question might be Stone.
That's
and
the closest
and four
one.
First-round?
Everybody else is a no-brainer. Stone... Yeah, I'd consider not taking four first-round picks, but the way I see it is if you have four first-round picks, you have four ads at the deadline. You can buy the best rental for four straight years and not hurt your system at all. That's a pretty good little thing to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, I guess maybe the only way that maybe you justify not doing something like that is if it's an offer sheet from a team that's so ridiculously good that you know the first round picks are going to be super deep every year.
Even then,
I'm trying to think of any way that I wouldn't do it. But generally, a team that good that you know is going to go that deep doesn't have the cap room or something like that right. to get somebody like that anyhow. So it's a moot point.
I mean, say it were to be Marner. So Marner is a superstar in the NHL. Marner's 22 years old. Marner is everything you could possibly dream of in a player adding to your roster. There's not a roster in the NHL that wouldn't take Mitch Marner. There's probably not a roster that would get four first round picks. Would somebody do two? I think they might. Would somebody do two in a second? I think they might. So that's kind of where that number has to come in. Where now the idea of the offer sheet is somebody's willing to overpay and give the compensation. Now the original team can match that and not take the compensation. The only loser in all of this is the team who had to sign him, which now they have to pay their good player more money. It's a bargaining tactic that takes away what happened to Shea Theodore last summer, that takes away what may wind up happening to Jimmy Schultz or Nikita Gusev for the Golden Knights, where you have no bargaining power. There's nothing you can do. You're an RFA, so you can't change teams. You don't have arbitration rights because you're too young or haven't played enough games. And the only thing you can do is withhold your services, which what good does that do the NHL? Shea Theodore missing camp. Why was that good? William Nylander missing half the season. Why is that a benefit to the NHL? It doesn't make sense to me.
That's the voice of Ken Bolke with Sin Bin, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. Down to one day a week right now with the a little bit of downtime for a lot of people out there. Next week, Ryan and Chris will be back in the studio. Always enjoyed speaking with Ken. Okay, so we've talked about the offer sheets a little bit. Just wrapping that up, we mentioned that there was an offer sheet this year, but was there really even an offer sheet?
Yeah.
Why not? Well, because the deal was almost so laughable to Carolina that they were like, okay, yeah, fine. We know we're going to match that. I mean, it's like, if it was a legitimate offer sheet, shouldn't they have offered more to at least make Carolina think about it? Because as soon as that offer came out, Dundon, the owner of the Hurricanes, basically said, yeah, that's not even an offer sheet.
That.
That's a joke. Yeah, we can get him for that. Okay, that's actually a decent deal for us because Aho is a phenomenal young player.
So take away take away all the compensation, take away all of the way that it worked in the salary bonus structure, because the way that that salary is set up is it's a win for the player. He's going to get a massive amount of money straight up front, and then lockout years he's protected. It's a good situation for the player, but just the dollar amount. What the dollar amount was, Aho signed it. Aho said, I'll play for that.
Right.
That's an amount of money that I'll play for. So basically what it does is it just sped up the process. He may have gotten something close to that, maybe a little bit less from Carolina. I think the term would have been different. He took a five-year deal, which puts him right at UFA year. That's a benefit for the player, where I think that's a loss for the Hurricanes. But all it did was really speed up that process and help the league avoid Sebastian Aho not showing up to camp and being that story.
Were you a little bit surprised that Carolina immediately said they were going to do it? Because originally they had kind of made it sound like, well, we'll think about it a little bit. Like, because now Montreal kind of handcuffed themselves a little bit, because if they don't and then they have to sign him, then they have to do something.
Right.
They could have made Montreal suffer or sweat it out a little bit more. But they really didn't.
Technically, they did. They didn't sign it until the very last second.
Right. But when the owner comes out and says we're going to match it, it's kind of...
Doesn't really make a huge difference. They could have moved in and done some other sort of offer sheet. I think it goes back to the fact that you have new ownership in Carolina. It's an owner that's a little bit different. He's a little bit of a wacko in a good way now we're seeing, and maybe that'll change. But it was a situation where somebody said, you know what? Let's just see. It's not going to hurt us. We can afford the first, second, third round pick. Let's just take a look at this and see, are they willing to do it? Because if you're Montreal, you're sitting there saying, if we sign him to this amount for those three picks, that's a win for us. Worst case scenario, they sign it, no big deal. Now, the question is, how much does Mark Bergevin piss off everybody else in the league? That I don't know.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's also a plus for Montreal in a weird kind of way, because at least it shows their fan base that they're trying to make moves and
absolutely,
they're trying to make improvements, even if they never did think that they were going to get it and it was going to happen or whatever. Sometimes you just want to send out that positive kind of vibe, because the fan base in Montreal can be pretty critical.
Yeah.
And recently they've got a lot of reason to be critical
and
the last several
they've
years.
They've got an interesting group, and I think that Sebastian Aho would have been a good option. I think another thing that they went out of their way to try to do is to kind of almost play this smear campaign of saying Sebastian Aho wants to be a Canadian. Well, he's playing in the Eastern Conference, and now he's going back to the Hurricanes, and all this time, there's all this news about how badly he wanted to be a Canadian, and he signed the offer sheet, so obviously he was willing to be a Canadian. I think there's a little bit of behind-the-scenes action going on there, but in the end, it wasn't going to happen, so he signs him. It does, however, open the door to make the offer sheet less taboo than it's been. At least it does that. I'd be surprised if there's another one this offseason, and I would be surprised if there's another one before the CBA changes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think we'll see it. But again, who knows? Somebody might throw something out there. Well, this is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, not the Carolina Hurricanes, but we got off on that a little bit. And however, we will be going back to Carolina in a way in the second segment of the show, because the new GM for Seattle certainly has some ties to Carolina. But let's go with the Vegas Golden Knights a little bit. And like I say, I know that you've wrote a fine article on the 22 shifts of Jimmy Schultz.
Yeah.
Not exactly the favorite topic of the gentleman that you were on with earlier today, Tyler Bischoff. But there is a big question this year about what is going to happen with the Vegas Golden Knights on defense. We know Colin Miller's gone. So there's a spot open. Some people think there should be more than one spot open. You can get into your thoughts on that as well if you would like to. But Jimmy Schultz seems to be the front runner for that position right now. Nick Hague is the guy that everybody was talking about last year.
Yep.
With the Chicago Wolves, had a really good season. Some people thought that White Cloud maybe had an even better season with them. Tyler Bischoff is one of those players in the mix as well.
Jake.
I have Tyler Bischoff. Well, I mean, he makes it sound like they're twin brothers or something. So, yeah, you're right, Jake Bischoff.
I'm pretty sure Jake doesn't like him, and I don't blame him.
Well, I've heard some of the commercials that he did for him.
Commercials are hilarious. It's the interviews where it's just cringeworthy, awful awkwardness. And I wouldn't make that call if I'm Jake Bischoff again, but hey, he signed for 3 years, not me.
Yeah. So you're saying Tyler might be the one reason why Jake would rather stay in Chicago than come to Vegas?
Probably a good move. He's like, you know what? Yeah, okay, fine. I'm going down back to the AHL, but at least I don't have to deal with that guy.
There could be
his
something.
His phone rings
that.
At 10:15. He's like, nope.
All right. So Jimmy Schultz, why is he the front runner? What does he have that the other ones don't, besides being such a great college player and certainly in the conversation for the Hobie Baker Award?
I think the number one thing is experience. I think 4 years of playing in college and playing at a level that is a little bit more of a defensive first type of style of hockey, as opposed to Nick Hague, who has played 1 year in the AHL and was good. I think that gives him a little bit of a benefit. I just flat out think he's a better player than Zach Whitecloud. I think Whitecloud would have the upper hand if not for that. I think what stuck out to me in watching all of Schultz's shifts more so than anything was the aggressive style he plays with, where he's willing to join the rush quickly. He's willing to activate off the blue line when the puck's in deep. He's willing to pinch in many different situations, and he did a very, very good job against it. Now, granted, he's playing the Kings in a meaningless game on their last game of the season, and they were giving him constant shifts. There's no fear of, if I make a mistake, I'm not playing for the next 4 or 5 shifts here, because he knew this is my one and only game. Let's leave it all out there, and they're not going to bench the guy.
Yeah, you're not looking over your shoulder.
Correct. And there's no one there. So Schmidt didn't play. Theodore didn't play in that game. So there's really no one there behind him. But I thought that what he really did well was he really played that style of game the Golden Knights want to play with their defensemen, where the puck is on his stick, it's up and out of the zone quickly, and he's coming with. The only issue I really had was there were some issues sorting out rushes. When the puck would come in, and it happened 2 or 3 times where he and Derek Englund would kind of back into the zone together, and the communication, or however they decided to sort it out, was a mess almost every single time. Once it led directly to a goal, once it led to a slot shot that nobody was guarding, and Fleury made a heck of a save. I think that that's going to be a bit of an issue, and they're going to have to find him a partner that he fits with, and maybe that is Derek Englund, I don't know. But the raw offensive skill coupled with his skating, with his knowledge, with his experience, with his age, I think makes him the clear front runner to me. And to be quite honest, I would be surprised if he's not one of the guys on the roster, because I think they're going to waive Nick Holden.
Now, okay, so if they waive Nick Holden, then how many defensemen does the team have? Because I know we talked about before, there was some talk about maybe the Golden Knights like to have 2 extra defensemen.
Yeah,
do they
7.
Continue that?
Not necessarily. I think they'll start the season off with 7. I don't think they necessarily have to go with 8. I don't think it's all that crazy to believe that the Golden Knights will start the season off with 21 or 22 players rather than the full 23 due to cap reasoning. They don't have to have them out of camp, and they have a lot of waiver-exempt players, Cody Glass, all the defensemen. There's some options there to kind of Zekoff's another one, where you can slip them through and put them in the AHL and not have to deal with the salary cap at the beginning of the season. So I would guess they'll wind up with only 7. If Nick Holden's not on the roster, I would say it's Schultz for sure. I'd be very surprised if it's not. And then Bischoff or Whitecloud would be my next guess. I don't think, unless Hague is dominant, which is possible, I don't think he's going to make the roster out of camp. I do think he's going to eventually play.
What do you see the pairings looking like?
That's very tough to decide, because I think that the safe thing to do is go back to Schmidt and McNabb. And I think that's probably the way that Turk is going to lean. He likes to kind of keep things going the way they were going. However, for me, I would prefer that they just dip the foot completely in the water and dive straight in, whatever, and say, let's just do what we need to do, and that's going to be Schmidt and Theodore. I think Schmidt and Theodore are your clear best 2 defensemen, and I think a pairing of them over time would work. That also allows you to have options with both McNabb and Englund. It gives you the ability to put a player like a Dylan Coghlan or even a Nick Hague or a Whitecloud or a Schultz, whoever, with McNabb or Englund, and then Merrill goes with the other one. And I think you're going to get a pretty good set of three pairings there. My guess, though, is it's going to be Rookie with Englund, and then Merrill goes with probably Holden if he's still on the roster. And then they'll go Schmidt and McNabb.
You touched on maybe starting out with 21 or 22 players because of the salary cap. Where do the Golden Knights sit right now? Because George McPhee says that it's not that big a deal, and people are maybe making a little bit more of it or something like that. How damaging is the salary cap right now, and are they still looking to make a move? Because they haven't completely ruled out that they're not still interested in maybe a free agent or two out there. Obviously, if they're looking at something like that, there's a deal to be made. But when other teams know that you have those problems, can you get fair value for a deal, and what would those deals be?
To answer the last question, no, you can't get fair value when you know you're in that pinch. However, I do think there's some maneuvering, and I do think there's a number of different movable pieces that allow them to keep their value in a lot of players. There's a different value on a Cody Eakin than a Ryan Reeves, than a Nick Holden, than even if you go with my crazy theory, which would be to move Stastny. I think there are different pieces, there are different values that allow them to do different things that really don't put them fully cap-strapped. Plus, the Nikita Gusev situation has to figure itself out. If they were to move on from Nikita Gusev, there's very little, if anything, that they need to do to get under the salary cap. They're there. It's if they do wind up signing him, and he does take up $4.5 million, if Schultz take or four or whatever, if Schultz takes up 1.8 or something of that sort, if these numbers come in a little bit higher, now you're put in a position where you're going to have to make a move again. I keep going back to what McPhee said in the final press conference, which was that they don't expect another move. That they're just going to, quote, work around the edges. To me, working around the edges means one of two things. It means bottom six players move. Ryan Reeves would be the one that comes to mind there. Or they get rid of Nikita Gusev.
Well, the other thing, too, we know that if George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have an idea right now that they're going to do something, they're not going to share it anyhow because they don't want to let other people know about that.
Yeah.
A name that we hear out there a lot is Pacioretty. With his contract, and because of the situation that Vegas is in, I don't think they would get anywhere near the value for him. But you mentioned Stastny, and I know you're not the only person out there that has talked about Stastny and possibly moving him as well. If they were to consider that move, because that would be a pretty nice salary cap to have the luxury to have on there, would that be only assuming that Cody Glass is ready to make the team?
100%. And that's where I think that the decision on Gusev is going to slow the process down in what they're going to do with the rest of the salary cap. Because if you sign Gusev, now you then put him in the camp. You put Glass in camp. You put Jonas Ronbjerg and Patrick Brown and Nicholas Waugh and Zekoff and all Noshik, all these guys. And you figure out, you'd be like, look, one of you needs to step up. Somebody needs to claim this spot to allow us to make the other move. If they find out that Cody Glass is so good that they can make that move, the value on Paul Stastny is terrific. But if Cody Glass isn't quite there, which I think is unrealistic to believe, he's there. It's just whether the spot's going to be there, and it may not. If Carlson, Stastny, and Eakin are on the roster, I don't see a spot for Glass to play. So I think he might be going back to Chicago just for that reason alone, and that has nothing to do with Cody Glass. He's just not better than Cody Eakin today. Unfair. He shouldn't be. So it's an interesting idea. I think where what gets lost, and when people hear me say Stastny, when they hear me say trading Stastny, what gets lost is I'm not looking at who's better, Cody Glass or Paul Stastny, or who's better, Paul Stastny or Nikita Gusev. That's not really how I'm looking at it. What I'm looking at is, what does the team look like if you move Cody Eakin up to the second line, Cody Glass plays in the third line, and then Nikita Gusev is an option, as opposed to if you were to get rid of Gusev and now it's Stastny, Eakin, and Peary's on the left wing on the third line. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think there's a reason Brandon Peary got paid $750,000, and there's a reason why Nikita Gusev is being considered for $4 million. I think that's a huge difference in what the ceiling of these two players can be, and I think you can be better replacing Paul Stastny with Nikita Gusev in how your entire roster looks, not just that player is better than that player.
And we've been talking a lot, too, about the center position, obviously, and Cody Glass is somebody And Ryan and I have talked about this quite a bit. If he's going to be on the team, you can't put him on the team as a third or fourth line. Yep. But he also can't be a third or fourth line guy necessarily because that's not his talent. Maybe a third, maybe a third, but fourth he couldn't be.
Depends who the wingers are. Like, I don't think it makes sense to stick Cody Glass with, like, now granted he's gone now, but let's say it were Ryan Carpenter and Tomáš Nošík, Nicholas Waugh and Will Carrier. That doesn't make sense. What makes sense is sticking him with usable scoring first forwards and allow his defensive game to thrive and then let the offense bloom as he plays. I think third line center makes perfect sense for Cody Glass. The issue is that spot's not open, and quite frankly, he's not a winger. He didn't play wing in junior. He didn't play wing for Team Canada. He didn't play wing for the Wolves. He's never played wing in a Golden Knights jersey, whether it's development camp, rookie showcase, preseason, any of it. He's never done it. So to then just chuck him in as a wing makes absolutely no sense to me and sounds like a terrible idea. I don't think they'll do it, though.
Well, and not only sounds like a bad idea, but you also there's an old adage in sports, in life, and no matter what you're doing, set people up for success and not failure.
For sure.
If you put Cody Glass in an unfamiliar position, especially though he played with Chicago Wolves. Let's face it, the majority of the season he was still playing in the juniors with the Winter Hawks.
All but the playoffs.
So we saw him with Chicago, but we didn't see him even a full season there. And then to expect him to make that jump into the NHL and then change in position as well, you're basically setting him up for potential failure. And you don't want to do that confidence-wise and everything else. He was the first draft pick you ever had.
Well, even just skill level, like what he does best is his positioning, and that's as a center. He's fairly good at draws. Now, granted, we'll have to wait and see how that does in the NHL. It did fairly well in the AHL coming off of that, so that's good. And then he's defensive first. He's a defense first center. He's more like Paul Stastny. He's more like William Karlsson. He's more like Cody Eakin, like in that, as opposed to the offense first centers that you see on a lot of other teams. I think that putting him on the wing takes away what he's best at. And why would you do that to a 20-year-old? Doesn't make sense to me.
No,
but there's a lot of things about this offseason that don't make sense to me.
It makes sense, but it makes bad sense. It's not a logical, intelligent move to do.
I don't think they would do it anyway.
No, I don't either. I mean, So, yeah, we'll find out.
But
we don't know what's going to happen.
Don't have a spot.
Yeah.
If Stastny and Eakin and Karlsson are on the roster, there's not a spot because you're not going to play him as fourth line center. It does not make sense. And I don't think you would do that. Why chuck him in there for 8 minutes a game?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
No, it definitely doesn't make sense. Then you know what George McShee's going to want to do. Let him play in Chicago and keep on cooking him until there is that spot open
and,
for him.
And before you go, I know you want to get out on a break here, but that's why Stastny's name comes up for me, because if Cody Glass is ready to go, now you have a first-round pick that you've taken that's ready to go, that's ready to contribute, that can play in a role. Cody Eakin can move up, showed out very well in the 30 games that Stastny missed, and Paul Stastny probably brings you back a first-round pick. So not only are you getting better or at least staying the same on your NHL roster, but you're also bringing back a first-round pick. You trade Nikita Gusev, you're getting Nicholas Waugh 2.0. Why is that beneficial?
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Mr. Ken Bulkey, the voice of, well, one of the voices of Sinbin, does a great job over there. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the other stuff going on with the Vegas Golden Knights. Their road trip is coming up again. They have the bobbleheads for the preseason games. I want to get your thoughts on that, too, about, you know, most teams have to entice fans to want to go to the preseason games. The Golden Knights don't necessarily have that problem. And then, believe it or not, there's other teams in the NHL as well. Lots more to get to. Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey.
Bonjour, c'est Pierre-Édouard Belmar, et vous écoutez l'émission des Vegas Golden Knights à l'intérieur des vestiaires avec Franck Arniche. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM et 1340 AM. Votre émission pour le hockey des Golden Knights à Las Vegas.
Listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish and Ryan Wallace.
All right, welcome back. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Frank Harnish with my good friend, Mr. Ken Bulkey from Sinbin Vegas. If you don't check out Sinbin every day, you're not doing hockey right here in Las Vegas. It should definitely be one of your favorites. Jared Justice behind the board as well. Ryan the Hockey Guy and Chris Chapman will join us once again. They'll be back next week from their vacations, hopefully well-rested and ready to go. All right, before we get to looking around the league at some other teams and things that are going on, Vegas Golden Knights have announced their road trip coming up once again. You like the road trip thing? I think it's a pretty cool thing. I'm still not sure that Colorado is convinced that Vegas is a team of the Rockies, but you know what? They show the games in those areas and they go to the small towns, so
I'm good with the road trip now. I still make the same argument I made back in the first road trip. And I was all up in arms about the first road trip because the first one, before they ever did a player appearance in Las Vegas, they went to Billings, Montana, or Cree de Coeur, Idaho or something. I don't know. I can't even pronounce it. It's not even in English. And they're going there. I didn't understand that. I still make the same argument. Why not have one in Henderson and one at T-Mobile on the way in and the way out? Like I don't understand why this isn't happening in Vegas as well as when you're going out. If you're doing a road trip, start in Vegas and end in Vegas. It doesn't make sense to me. There's the one thing that consistently comes up that concerns me and frustrates me is there's a certain lack of focus towards non-season ticket holders that the option is, get on the wait list or the can't wait list, which I still find weird that that's the name. But go on that, and then we'll take care of you. Well, what about the people who literally cannot afford a ticket but want to be a fan? Why are there not options for that? They just did the garage sale. It was phenomenal. You get used gear and all this. I bought me some white gloves. It was fantastic. It was season ticket holders only. You know, there's a lot of these events, the paint the ice, season ticket holders only. There's a lot of events that are only season ticket holders. And I understand taking care of those people.
Yeah, the gold jackets that you see around T-Mobile and that during the games.
They're giving
season tickets,
millions of dollars. I get it. But every once in a while, there should be a moment. And the road trip is yet another example of doing stuff for non-season ticket holders anywhere but in Vegas and Henderson. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That being said, I love the fact that they're doing it. I'm all for there being fans in Montana and Colorado and anywhere else but Vegas. That's just those people can get on the internet. They can get on my site. I'm happy about it.
Well, you know, maybe next year when they have the new facility down in Henderson, maybe they will wrap it up there. Maybe they'll do it right.
We saw a massive spike in reads and clicks when they went to the Vienna Capitals. That's a complete lie, but hey, keep finding new fans. I'm all for it. Although, Derek England's name being on that list, what's that all about? How are you going to bring him on a road trip with Golden Knights jerseys? He's not under contract. He's not a Golden Knight. I don't understand it.
Well, and he's been doing, I mean, again, when they did the groundbreaking for the facility.
Well, I think then, that was pre-July 1.
Okay, so he was still under contract.
He was under contract. That's the weird part of the NHL, is like guys are not out of contract very long normally. Like even a guy like Jimmy Schultz or Jake Bischoff, they're still a restricted free agent. They're still tied to the Golden Knights. This guy's not at all. Like, of course Derek England's going to be a Golden Knight and going to represent the Golden Knights in the future, but it's a little weird to me to not sign that contract and still put his name in there.
Maybe they're doing the thing like from Office Space where they just like,
I believe you have my stapler.
They keep letting him show up, but they just stop paying.
They build him an office in the basement of City National Arena and forget to pay him. And he has to go up to McCrimmon every once a week. Like, did not believe get my paycheck.
I think the players.
I'm not opposed to
that. I think
that.
The players' union and that might have something to say about that. I'm not sure they can pull it off like they did.
Years later,
in Office
he burns City National to the ground, and there's a little note. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Hey, by the way, if you are out there and checking out Sinbin from someplace else, since they are the team of the Rockies, it will be in Idaho Falls August 5th. Then they will be heading over to Billings, Montana, August the 6th. Casper, Wyoming, August 7th. Wrapping up in St. George, Utah, August the 9th.
Outside of St. George, Utah, because I feel like people around here know what St. George, Utah is. Have you ever even heard of any of those other three cities?
I've actually heard of them, but I had some friends that went to school in Idaho and in Billings, Montana. I had friends that used to go there.
I have never heard of any of them. I thought they were just going to Billings, Montana because it had the word Bill in it, and it sounds like fun for Foley.
Okay.
But I don't know. What do I know? No. Nonetheless, good deal. Do that. I just recommend, why not start and end in Vegas? Why not have something that allows people in Vegas to get a piece of this too? practice is good, yes, but practice, they're on the ice and they disappear. There's actually a little bit of interaction that goes on in these things.
Yeah, I've they do some things around the community,
yeah,
and that
great.
Sort of stuff.
And again, it's awesome. The more you can do on this, it's great. And what I do like about this is it's Cody Glass, it's Nick Hague, it's Zach Whitecloud. It's the up-and-coming kids that are going to become more and more popular. And that's how you build real fans, is that I met Cody Glass before he ever played an NHL game. And then when he's played 1,000 and you're there for the Silver Stick ceremony, you're like, that's awesome. I met him in Bill, Montana.
Yeah.
What is it? Billings?
Billings, Montana.
What
yes.
was the one in Idaho?
Idaho Falls.
Well, that just sounds made up.
No, no, it's a place.
What's the other one?
Now you're going to make me go back and find
what's
that.
The, there's one in the Utah I knew of, Idaho.
And Casper, Wyoming.
Oh, Casper. That's a ghost. That's not a thing.
I would say those are the largest cities amongst area.
What is, no, well, there's a bigger city
Idaho
in
Falls
Wyoming.
Idaho Falls is not the largest at any stretch in Idaho.
What do you think the population of Casper, Wyoming is?
It's got to be like 12,000. That's a huge city in Wyoming, isn't it?
For Wyoming,
I'm going to take over 12,000, but 57,000. Which is larger than Laramie. I've actually heard of Laramie. Cheyenne.
Well, you've
has
heard
63.
Of Laramie because they have a basketball team
right.
that plays in the Mountain West Conference.
That's correct. They have 32. 63 in Cheyenne. I think that's the capital. Yeah. Casper, Wyoming. Ooh, 5,100 feet above sea level. Wow.
I believe in Idaho that I think maybe both Pocatello and Boise might be bigger.
Second largest city in the state, according to the 2010 census. So okay. In case there was some sort of baby boom between 2010 and 2019, that's probably still the second highest. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that the Golden Knights fan base is exploding massively with 56,000 people, right?
All right. The thoughts of Ken Bulkey are not necessarily those of Lotus Broadcasting. Just don't want to be called an individual office.
Yeah, well, call right, me in.
Let's talk about a positive thing.
I have no problem with it. I just do it in Vegas, too.
No, I agree. And you know what? I like your thought about maybe doing it from the new Henderson facility next year. Because they're up in Summerlin all the time at City National.
Yeah, okay.
Then wrap it up and bring the buses into T-Mobile and have a big thing out in the park.
Outside go north,
of there.
Go east, go down south.
But
whatever.
How you said, even if they do T-Mobile, you know, you'd imagine Dragons, get something, entertainment, make a whole big celebration of the Vegas Golden
Works
Knights getting
me.
Ready for this. And, you know, then open up the arena and let people go in there.
And hey, never hurts to have things in July.
No.
There's nothing going on in July and early August, so the more you can do, the more you can drum up. I think that they're going to have to take steps as the Raiders come in to make sure that this three-month offseason, because the Golden Knights lost on April 17th. It's July 17th today. That's a long time. It's been 3 months, and we are nowhere close to something happening. They're going to have to start learning how to fill this gap because the Raiders don't take a break. The NFL does not take a day off. And they're going to have to find a way to start filling that gap. And stuff like that is that.
Yeah, and well, when you talk about the gap seems really long this year because they got knocked out of the playoffs early, or certainly earlier than they wanted to. What about a year that they don't make the playoffs?
That
will happen eventually.
It's 2 weeks earlier, so it's not a huge difference. But realistically, there's only two teams that play into June. There's only a few. There's only like four that play deep into May. You're talking 4.5, 5, 6 months no matter what. And heck, heaven forbid you're the Kings and you're out in November of last year. Ooh.
Yeah. Kings and Ducks playing for that. Who's the best worst team in Southern California?
They're both horrible.
All right. The preseason games. Now, I remember when I lived back in Chicago in the preseason games, we went to them. Because we were young and we were still excited because it was still hockey and you do see some of the future guys. Some people that have been around forever, you go to every regular season game, they're not as into the preseason games. This preseason, they've kind of enhanced it a little bit. They have bobbleheads. And I swear, I'm sure that you're around the same circles and I know you're super aggressive on the social media and everything. It seems like more people are excited about the bobbleheads in the upcoming games almost.
I can't argue with them. The games are what the games are. Like, I'm a big fan of preseason because I'm all about the prospects and I like to learn more about the Patrick Browns and Nicholas Waugh's and Jacob Megnas of the world. I like those, but I get why fans don't. The rule is you have to play eight players that have actually had some sort of experience. So it's not like you're getting much of a game. There's no hitting. There's no intensity in this game. They're not hockey. They're just skating around trying to get their legs going. It's not great. Bobbleheads, I'm all for it. I'm concerned a little about this message. There's supposedly a message on the four bobbleheads that when you put the four bobbleheads together, they'll make a special message.
Carlson, Marshall, Stone, and Schmidt.
Yeah, I was hoping there'd be a Gusev one, but
that would have made a message.
Didn't happen.
That would have made a message.
Yeah, that didn't happen. I'm still trying to figure out this birthday conspiracy. They didn't wish happy birthday to Nikita Gusev, but they did to Nate Schmidt yesterday or today or whenever it was. I don't know. It might be a little deep for me, but I don't know. That might be a little Raid Area 51 for me, but maybe we're on to something there. Nonetheless, I'm all about preseason games.
Maybe Gusev will be one of the Facebook group that's going to storm Area 51 in September or whatever.
I would recommend he doesn't do that.
Yeah, well, trust me. There's a million people on Facebook that say they're going to.
Yeah.
There'll be like six people out there.
I don't think that would be his best introduction to the United States of America.
How about they introduced him on the road trip someplace and all of a sudden Gusev was one of those surprise Golden Knights that show up out of nowhere?
That
would be awesome.
I'm all for that. No doubt.
And now, in Casper, Wyoming, the latest Golden Knight, Nikita Gusev.
That sounds terrific. All right, I'm going to make a declaration. Now, granted, I'm probably going to be in Italy for some of this time. If Nikita Gusev shows up to Billings, Wyoming, or
Billings, Montana,
Casper, Wyoming, Idaho Falls, Idaho, or St. George, Utah. If he shows up, I will fly there and I will be there. And you will get Sinbin live Periscope with Nikita Gusev and we will translate. It's going to be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That's how confident I am that that's not happening.
All right. Now I really want it to happen. That'd
I know.
So
I do
awesome.
Too. I do too. That'd be great. I'm like driving up through Billings, Montana. Unbelievable.
All right. Real quick.
Casper, Wyoming.
Real quick, Ron Francis named the GM of the Seattle club. He gets basically twice the amount of time, a little bit more than that, to build this club than George McPhee had.
Ridiculous amount of time, yeah.
Why sign him so early, and what are the realistic expectations for Seattle?
Why sign him so early is because why not? If he's the guy and you like him as the option, you might as well do it. That's the main reason for that is that there's never too early for a startup. If you've got more time, ramp it up, and you can take things a little bit slower than the Golden Knights had to do, which is good. Expectations are tough because are they an expansion team or are they an expansion team with the Golden Knights rules? Like, I think the expectation should kind of fall somewhere in between. But I don't think they can have the expectation of your standard expansion team, which is we're the worst team in the NHL. I don't think that can be the expectation. And to be completely honest,
it shouldn't be.
That's probably the most likely scenario. They should not be very good. And teams will have learned how to maneuver an expansion draft using this rules a little bit better. They should have good goaltending. That's the one thing. They should have fairly good goaltending. But outside of that, the expectations, if the expectations are playoffs, they're going to be sorely disappointed, I think.
Yeah, we'll find out.
No matter who the GM, coach, anybody, it's not going to matter.
It depends on which Ron Francis is there, the one that got Timo Teravainen for the Hurricanes or the ones that got Scott Darling from the Blackhawks for the Hurricanes.
That was the same one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
That's
so
confusing.
Which Ron Francis will show up in Seattle on draft day? Stay tuned. Going to wrap it up with a feel-good story. Make-A-Wish, a great organization. Well, they're going to be featured on ESPN tonight, and the Golden Knights are part of that story.
Tämä on Erik Haula ja kuuntelet Vegas Golden Knights Insideria Frank Harnessilla Fox Sport Radio 98.9 FM:ssä ja 14.30 AM. Sinun kotisi Vegas Golden Knights.
How are you doing? It's Ryan Reeves. We're here at City Council. Very excited to bring 75 Brewing to the city of Las Vegas downtown. New city that I call home, so very excited about this opportunity.
Back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish and Ryan Wallace.
So we drink and we drink and we drink some more.
Welcome back. Wrapping it up, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Frank Harnish, joined by Ken Boeke from Sinbin. Ken, thanks for coming in today and joining us.
You got it.
Okay, so the Vegas Golden Knights, when Bill Foley first built the team, he mentioned that he wanted players that were talented on the ice, but also We're all about the community and helping out other stuff. Well, certainly the Golden Knights have done that since they first joined the city here a couple years ago, and they continue to do so. ESPN, the Make-A-Wish Foundation, they do a lot of good stuff with them. And be sure to check it out tonight on SportsCenter because it will feature the Golden Knights and Doran Caldwell, a young man from Vegas here who...
Well, Vegas! It's night time! Please, welcome to the ice, number 15 for your Vegas Golden Knights, Doran!
Have it, Doran Caldwell there, getting announced at City National Arena. They made him an honorable knight for the day. The young man has been battling Hodgkin's lymphoma. It is in remission right now. He loves the Knights. It was pretty cool. Marc-Andre Fleury, because he played goalie in roller hockey, kind of like our friend Jesse Granger from The Athletic. Yep. But he plays goalie there. Fleury's helping him put on his pads, and he's like, wow, these pads are way more intensive than my pads were. Then he's out there stopping pucks from Carlson and Eakin and everybody else, with Fleury giving him incentive, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, that video was awesome. You got to watch it. It's like 7 minutes. It's really, really good.
The feel-good piece, and the Golden Knights making all of Vegas feel good. Next week, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Chris Chapman back in the fray. We'll see you, talk to you again next Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. Thanks to Ken Bolke and Jared Justice.